Welcome to the Weekend Warriors Fishing Podcast, presented by 13 Fishing Canada. Make your own luck. We're here to scratch that angling itch and talk everything fishing. Join us as we sit down with special guests from across the industry. Now, here's your hosts, Brandon Cater and Logan Lewis.
What is going on, everyone? Thank you very much for tuning into episode 61 of the Weekend Warriors Fishing Podcast. I hope you're doing very well. I am your host, Logan Lewis, and we have another Manitoba-themed episode today for you. We have Marcel LeFerrier on, the man behind the camera for lots of the Hunt Fish Manitoba stuff. It was definitely a fun sit-down, pretty well an hour and a half, so it's going to be a long episode today. But yes, thank you very much for tuning in. Lots has happened since the last episode. It's been a couple weeks here. Finally managed to fill my first mule deer tag, a nice buck, which I think will be posted by the time this episode is up. So, that was definitely something pretty exciting. Spent a lot of time since basically September 1st there, looking for these deer, a couple failed stalks on this one and another one that I was after, and finally was able to put everything together a couple weekends ago. And then day after that got COVID, so that had me down and out for a little bit here, but definitely excited to be getting into episode 61 here with Marcel. Talked about a lot of things, got to have a pretty cool in-depth look at the Hunt Fish Manitoba brand and all the guys that are kind of around there and all those guys you see on YouTube and stuff like that for the last however many years. It's definitely pretty interesting talking to him. And wanted to mention at the top of the episode, the Winnipeg Ice Show is on this weekend, and that's where you'll find Marcel, Jay, Kevin, Josh, lots of those guys there. It's going to be a good time. Myself and Brian went there last year. It was a blast. So much to see, so much to do, lots of good deals, and tons of great product there. So definitely, if you're listening to this on the Friday that it came out, or even the Saturday, the show's running this weekend. So head over there, check it out, buy some stuff. It'll be a good weekend. But before we get into the interview here, wanted to mention, of course, our presenting sponsors, 13 Fishing. Huge thanks to them for being on since day one. Funny enough, Marcel also does some work there with 13 as well. So I got a couple 13 Fishing guys here on the episode today. We're getting minus temperatures. We've got some snow since the last episode. Things are getting closer and closer to ice fishing season. We're already seeing some people finding somewhat safe ice. Definitely, like we always say, be safe out there. Make sure that ice is good to go before you're heading out there. I know here around where I am in Saskatchewan, we're going to have some warm weather for the next couple weeks. So that will delay things a little bit here. But just the other night, started getting all my stuff together. And just today, placed an order for some Rapala stuff, some 13 Fishing stuff. So I'll definitely be talking about that stuff once it comes. But like I said, check them out. Use the code Weekend Warriors. Save yourself 15% off on the entire website. Tons of great brands there. We're getting close to ice fishing season. They ship crazy fast. So you'll maybe even do a couple orders here before you actually head out on the ice. But check them out and get yourself stocked up for ice fishing season. Also want to say a huge thank you to the Saskatchewan Wildlife Federation for sponsoring the podcast. Like I said, been spending a lot of time out hunting here, getting ready to transition into ice fishing. But can't go wrong with the membership with the Saskatchewan Wildlife Federation. And we also talk about the Master Angler program for Manitoba, but also for Saskatchewan in this episode. So continue entering those fish. It's only going to get better. The more people are using it, it's going to show them to keep making these things better. And definitely excited to see where things go with that. But grab yourself a membership. Pretty cheap. Lots of great, great benefits that come with the membership. So definitely head over, check them out, find out your local branch and get your membership. Then I think we'll have a quick word here, as always, from Lucky Bastard Distillers. You can find our code in the show notes below. Save yourself, they ship Canada-wide, and then we'll head right into the episode with Marcel.
There are certain moments in life that really stick with you. This is definitely one of them. The thrill of the deal, my friends, is not a myth.
Prohibition is over, Saskatchewan. Ask about LB's legendary Birmingham's Dill Pickle Vodka. After all, it's not a party until someone pulls out the pickle. Tours and tastings available. Call or stop by 814 47th Street East. And tonight, why not mix your Caesar with some Lucky Bastard?
It's the one with the pickle in it.
the most common way to say it would be Le Ferrier.
Le Ferrier?
If you were going to, an English person saying it in French would be like Le Ferrier.
We may as well kick it off right after that. That almost might be the greatest way to enter that. Then that way I don't butcher the name. But we're kind of sticking with the Manitoba tune here. This is the second episode in a row with some Manitoba boys. So obviously, like you saw at the top of the episode, we got Marcel here. We've had lots of the people that you've put in front of the camera on as we've talked about. And now we finally get you, the man behind the camera. So I guess for some of the listeners who aren't familiar with who you are, who are you? What do you do? And anything else you want to toss in there?
Well, to start, yeah, Marcel Le Ferrier, as we kick things off with, I'm a videographer, photographer, camera guy, whatever you want to call it, from Manitoba, based out of Winnipeg. Born and raised in Manitoba, not in Winnipeg. But where to start? I'm one of those guys who, like, I've hunted and fished my whole life, but didn't find a camera until later on in my life. And it was when I married those two things up that the ball really started rolling. So I've been a full-time content guy in the outdoor industry for, I don't know, maybe 7-8 years now or something like that. And wouldn't trade it for the world.
Yeah, I think people figure out lots of the things that they've seen on YouTube and stuff like that. They'll find out you're the man behind that, I think, as we get farther into the episode here. But I guess with that, like, obviously lots of people, it's kind of the same thing. They start with that hunting and fishing, right? And then some people just have an eye for it. They get that camera, then it's like, boom, you can kind of, you see that click. And so for you, how long do you think it kind of took once you'd picked up that camera for people to start noticing and kind of actually turning it into something that you can work with?
You know, when I first got into photography, for me, it was amateur photography. I bought a camera and I took a lot of really, really, really bad photos, like as bad as it gets. And whether it was just like a deer in a field as I was driving by, or like a goose in Assiniboine Park by the zoo, I just took photos of everything. And naturally, as I kind of got interested in taking photos, well, what am I going to take photos of, right? Like, it's going to be my hobbies, and I liked hunting and fishing. And so that just kind of naturally happened. And it took a long time before I feel like I made anything of any relevance or anything that looked remotely polished or skilled. Mm-hmm. But that being said, I think that that's all part of it, especially in like a day and age where you can go to school to be a photographer or a videographer and learn those skills. But a lot of people are doing it like a little bit more of a bread and butter way and just kind of figuring it out on their own online and whatnot. And that's kind of the route that I went. And when you go that route, you're going to make a lot of really bad stuff in the beginning. But if you stick to it and have some good mentors, which I luckily had, eventually you're going to put yourself in some scenarios where, as long as you're determined and persevere, you're going to start making some cooler stuff. And that's kind of just what ended up happening.
Yeah. And I don't know what it is. I talked about it on the last episode there too with Brady, like something to do with the Manitoba community, as far as with like the hunting and fishing scene and stuff. It's like, you guys are putting out a lot of like noteworthy people, whether it's on the, like the content creation or just like lots of names you hear, and it's like, oh, Manitoba or borders Manitoba, whether it's Ontario or Saskatchewan, stuff like that. And like, what do you think is with that? Cause I see lots of guys on YouTube, lots of the bigger guys, obviously Jay Clayton, stuff like that. That's kind of considered into that Manitoba tune, right? Like what's with that? What's in the water over there?
You know, what it really comes down to is it comes down to a brand is what it is. And it's the Hunt Fish MB brand. Mm-hmm. It's the hunting and fishing department of Travel Manitoba, who I've worked with for years now and has been such a core component of my entire career. And a lot of us guys owe a lot to that brand. You know, namely, we're talking about the Jays, the Claytons, the Aaron, the Kevin Erickson's of the world. Like, these are the guys that we all owe a lot mm-hmm. to that brand. And when you ask what's in the water, a lot of it comes down to a guy who spearheaded this industry in our area for us, whose name is Ryan Suffren, who was he absolutely revolutionized Hunt Fish Manitoba years ago. And he was one of the, he was a very key role with new marketing ideas into this space, into the outdoor space. And, you know, he helped like design like the absolute origins of Huntfish Manitoba and kind of paved the way for so many of us. And like, I can so confidently say that my career would not be where it was without him. And I'm not the only person that can say that. And I feel like we were very fortunate to have somebody to lead the way and kind of create a blueprint for a lot of people to follow. And, you know, that's not taking anything away from everyone's individual skills. But when you have the right people in the right role and you can create a team and everyone's, you know, focused on their skill set, things can really happen. And that's kind of like what happened. That's kind of like what happened here. Like there's a bunch of guys and everyone focused on what they were good at. And, you know, maybe we got a little bit lucky with, we were all kind of pretty close to each other, but, you know, it's not that different from, you know, what happened in the States with like the Guggen squad and stuff like that. Yeah. Like when there's teams and there's like people who can collaborate with one another and whatnot, things can really spiral quickly. And those guys are, you know, they're constantly helping each other, constantly doing YouTube videos with one another and whatnot. And it's just kind of like the ball can really get going.
Yeah, no, I think that's the biggest thing is having those people to collaborate with and work on these things with. Cause like you can do it yourself, but once you start to have that community that like, I know some, there might be stuff before, but like, I know some of the earliest stuff I was watching on YouTube was lots of Aaron stuff from what is that like over a decade now that he's been with that stuff. And yeah, he was the main guy with lots of that, but he always had, we're at this water body today with so-and-so and kind of like the local guy that knows what's up. And he would do with those guys, right? Lots of places, maybe the local guy wouldn't want to do with you because it maybe puts pressure on the spot or something like that, right? But having that willingness to do that is just, I always think of it this way. I've kind of, in Saskatchewan, there's groups of guys that fish and stuff like that, right? And I've always kind of thought of it this way, of trying to build a group of friends, because seven brains, whatever, working on something is going to do a lot more than one brain, even if that one brain's the smartest, most interesting person that there is, right? So I think that's kind of what I see with the group in Manitoba there, is you've got lots of different brains working on it, and it's the right people, right? Like it's, I think everyone has been watching those videos. It's not just a Manitoba thing, right? It's Saskatchewan, Alberta, lots of people in the States watching all that. Like that was the main, like Aaron there for a while was the main thing on YouTube that people are watching, right? Especially Canadian wise.
Yeah. And like the thing is like, especially with Aaron, like Aaron is an artist. He's like he's the perfect combination of like a perfectionist and an artist. And like no one can do Aaron like Aaron. And he, like, we're just so fortunate. Honestly, it's not even just Manitoba. Like the fishing industry is fortunate that we have Aaron and had, because his content early on was just so, it was unique to a level that almost, it blows my mind still going back and watching some of that stuff and just thinking like, there was nothing to go on, you know, like he was cultivating what he was doing. And it's just like, whether you're talking about people who followed him a year or two later, or people who are still thinking about getting into YouTube or content or whatever, like he just the blueprint is there, and it's just like, he didn't have anything to follow. Yeah. Right. So it's pretty special. There's no doubt about that.
Yeah. Because, and we'll get into this later too, but just with that, like the way that fishing shows and hunting shows were before that, and there's nothing wrong with it. It's the way it had to be so that you could afford to put on a show, but it was like lots of stuff that was cut instead of uncut, lots of cut stuff. And then lots of ads in there. Right. And the way that Aaron was able to do it, still have the sponsors, still have the advertising, but he worked everything in so naturally with that, so that he was able to go and do those things, right? Otherwise, when you're watching lots of those, it's Sunday morning, you're watching your fishing show out of the cabin or something, and it's like, it's ad after ad after ad. I think that was one big thing that YouTube allowed him to do, that and kind of revolutionize what we see now as hunting and fishing shows.
Yeah, absolutely. And it just also goes to show, like, when sponsors are willing to support people like that, like, those people, like, there's a reason that Huntfish Manitoba supports those guys the way that they do, because it's sponsors like that that allow shows to be the way they are nowadays, that anybody can just hop online right now and go watch a 1 hour film from Jay Siemens with like a couple short little ads in there at some point. But you can just go do that. You don't have to like wait for Sunday morning. You don't have to watch endless commercials. You don't have to watch 8 minutes of commercials for a 20-minute episode or something like that, right? And like, that's the beauty of these companies, right? It's like they can, the support, that level of support is what allows shows to function like that, right?
Yeah.
So, it's to say that the game has changed in terms of shows, like what is a fishing show nowadays is just like, it's pretty unbelievable.
Yeah, for sure. And I guess getting back to yourself, how old are you?
I just turned 27 last week.
Okay, so you're 96 as well. We're the same age then.
Yeah, 90.
So I guess it'd be fair to say that Jay's old, Aaron's old, and you're like the
I would say
is Kevin old too?
Oh yeah, especially really old. He doesn't like it. Kevin's like a year and a half older than me. I think he's old for his grade. He's one grade older than me, but he's old for his age. I'm young for my age.
Okay,
so there's like half the year that he's like. I forget what it is. I think there's like half the year that he's 2 years older than me or something like that. So we always joke about like in those half part of the year, I call him old. And then for the other half, we're like,
yeah,
the same age.
So, with those ages, then you're kind of almost coming in as what would be like a second wave for some of this, right? For the, like those guys, if you want to say that's there, I think it'd be fair to say on the level of OG for lots of that. Right. For this stuff. So as far as you getting into it, like, obviously, like you said, picked up the camera and how you got into becoming better at it. But how did you get specifically into the fishing and hunting game and then working with guys like that and some other names that you could bring up that we talked about before?
For sure. For me, it was actually fishing tournaments. I went to an ice fishing tournament called the Falcon Lake Winter Fish Off. And at that derby, I met a guy named Eric Lvoba, who's a very, very well-known name in the fishing industry in Manitoba as well.
Casting Deck and Podcast.
That's right. That's the one, yeah. And I met him there, and we started chatting. And what was kind of interesting there is that was my first time getting introduced to the fishing industry. I didn't really know the industry existed, right? Like, you know, all these brands exist and whatnot, but if you're just a grassroots angler and hunter, you don't really know that there's like careers on the other side of these brands and whatnot, right? So I met him and, you know, he had Kickerfish and he had things going on. And one of the things that he did was he was a tournament angler, right? And I was like, oh, that's kind of interesting. And so we like became Facebook friends and whatnot. And I started following along these fishing tournaments that were getting held in, you know, Manitoba, Northwest Ontario, Saskatchewan. And one of the things that I noticed is there was like, we're talking 60, 70 boat tournaments sometimes, and everyone's looking for photos from the tournament because they go and weigh in their fish. They might have won it, and there might be like one iPhone photo of their like event, right? And I was like, oh, that's kind of interesting. So I started going to these tournaments on my own dime, and I would just like message the director and be like, hey, can I just like show up and take pictures? And they always said yes, obviously, right? And I'd show up, take a bunch of bad photos, like early on, but then I'd literally just find people's names from the sheet, and I would just be like, hey, I was at the event, here's some photos from your tournament or whatever. And people really liked it. And it wasn't about making good content or anything like that. For me, that was just about meeting people. I met a lot of people that I now call friends and like dozens and dozens and dozens of people. And that was the first time that I really got introduced to it. And then from there, I just started, it really spiraled making content. And then for me, in terms of meeting people, the first one that I really got introduced to is Jay. And like, I was fans of all of these guys, but when I'm talking like meeting them, like this was like before Jay did YouTube, this was like 2016 kind of area.
Right.
I think he started in maybe 17 or 18. And it was at the Mid-Canada Boat Show in Winnipeg. And I just met him. We were both kind of working for a boat company, just doing a small little shoot. And it was my first time kind of getting introduced. And at the time, there was very little I mean, there still is a small amount of content in this industry, but at the time there was even less.
Yeah.
So somebody like a Jay going through the industry, there wasn't a lot of people that were obvious to help him if he wanted to grow, right? So that's kind of where I came in, where he was like, his business was doing good. And at that point, he was probably thinking about doing YouTube. And I was just a natural person to befriend because he could see that I was like, oh, this kid's passionate and whatnot, right? And potentially could help me in the future. Mm-hmm. And then that's exactly what happened. And I became better friends with him and started helping him on shoots. And next thing you know, he was doing the YouTube thing and helped him out with that. And we had a lot of really good times along the way. And I kind of met everybody from there and talking about like the Aaron Weaves and Claytons of the world. And yeah, there was a lot of good times back in the day. Like that was peak. I mean, things are pretty good now, but there were some good times back then, thinking about the 39 hours of the world and whatnot.
Oh, that's when everything was just rolling. Hey, like I agree with you. Like you could say the peak, not that things aren't good now, but that was like, it was just content from left, right, center. It was coming everywhere. And it was really raw stuff too. Like lots of stuff is not that it's bad, but like so polished and nice now. Back then it was just like, you watch lots of Aaron's video. That's just raw, straight information overload with everything in a good way. Like it's just, you watch those things, you're like, wow, like you learned so much. Right. And now things, I think you have to have things to be more pleasing to look at now too, just because everyone's up their game so much. It seems like you need lots of that nice B-roll stuff like that, right? To kind of break things up a bit, but also just keep people looking. And I think that's a big thing too. But yeah, I agree. That was some of the height of, especially just for around here and probably around the time too that the Guggen Squad was really taking off too, right? Like it kind of, they go hand in hand. Maybe that's just a YouTube thing in general for the outdoor scene. Things really started to take off there. But you also worked with some guys in the Guggen Squad as well too, right?
Yeah, the main project that I worked on was I got a message one day from John and just saying like, hey, I'm coming to Ontario and we need a guy. Are you interested? And I jumped all over it. I think it was 2018, I think. And yeah, I filmed a film, produced, edited a whole, like, I think it was maybe seven part series or something like that out of Northwest Ontario. Okay. And it was like negative 30 every day, maybe even colder than negative 30, I think, for some of them. And it was like really tough filming conditions, but it was so much fun. And like, I wish, it's tough. Like those guys are so busy, but I'd love to do more of that kind of thing. But it was a really good time. It was me, John, and Spencer Sumpowski, and it was just, it was ridiculous.
Was that the one where they made the huge ice fishing hole?
Yeah.
That was that one? Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
Yeah. That was the one. Yeah. That was so much work, like a painful amount of work. But it was worth it. It was very funny. It was bizarre, very bizarre to film, but it was a lot of fun.
So with that kind of stuff, I guess this would kind of transition to what I was thinking about talking next is kind of what kind of work goes into lots of these shots or whatever that the viewers don't really see. Like they'll see the person in front of the camera and everything like that, obviously. But for you as someone who's taking the photo or taking the video, what do people not realize is going on for you while this is happening?
I mean, there's definitely a lot of content just in general. There's just a lot more that goes into it than people think. But I feel like in this conversation, the extremes are what makes it really funny is the only word I can really think of. Like, for example, if you're filming like last year, I did like a short film at a lodge in Manitoba, Beggar's Nearest Lodge. Amazing trip. Like I'm so happy with how it all came together. It's like a 7-8 minute film or something like that. And from the outside, you just see a polished piece of content. And
yeah,
I see in those shots is like the near frostbite and the like near like times I almost like break very expensive gear where you're just like one mistake or one little thing away from absolutely destroying something, whether it's like hanging off the back of a snowmobile trying to get some kind of shot or like filming next to an ice hole and then like a fish release like pushes water and freezes your camera, like whatever it is. That's what I see when I watch a lot of my content is I see like what almost happened in situations like that. And I feel like hunting is like that even more a lot of the time. And there's one really funny clip that Kevin got two years ago, I think, in elk season. We were hunting, and it was a really wet year. And there's one spot to get to where we wanted to hunt. We had to put on take our boots off, put on chest waders, and walk across like waist deep water through a swamp to get to where we wanted to be. Then take the waders off, put our boots back on, and then we could go hunt. And the one day it was just miserable out. Like one of those days where you really wonder why you're out there. And it was like pouring rain. It was cold. It was windy. And we were walking back, and in those kind of conditions, when it's like really bad, I've got my camera in like a garbage bag or a cycling bag or something like that to try to just like keep it dry and whatnot. And he's got a clip of me just that he filmed on his phone walking across the swamp, like waist deep water, gear, everything like covered up completely with this like big camera and a recycling bag. And it's just like one of those things, like he's posted it several times, and every time people are just like, what am I even looking at? And like, that's like the epitome of like, I probably didn't get a shot that day that has ever seen. Actually, I'm almost positive that I did not film anything that day, sun up to sundown, like, ever. Like, I never even touched it. and it's just like, you might have to do that 5 times before you get something that you want. And that's just kind of the way it is. Like, filming, fishing, and hunting is not easy. You've got to, you have to endure a lot of suck in order to make it work. And, you know, I was fortunate, you know, guys like Jay, Aaron, those guys, they grind. And seeing that when I was younger was important because I learned you have to. You can't, it's not the kind of industry where you can just kind of be like, good enough for, like, there can't be good enough. So there can't be, I'm cold. There can't be, I'm tired. It's just like a lot of the time, it's just like, that's just the name of the game. And you got to endure it because it's not easy.
Yeah, well, and that's the biggest thing I always think of when I'm watching, especially like a meat eater hunting episode or something. I'm like, there's some poor guy following these guys with camera gear and all that stuff that goes along with it. Just, and these guys are just trying to hunt. They're just focusing on hunting, right? Obviously, they'd be, I guess, focused on making sure the content works out and they're in the right spots and stuff. But like, as far as the cameraman, there's some guy who most people are never going to see that is like hiking all these mountains, stuff like that. And it's just like, that's dedication there. And that's, I always, when the show I used to be obsessed with, it was Survivor Man. And I think of Les Stroud there, apparently doing it all by himself. So every shot you see him walking away, he then has to walk back and get the camera and all this stuff. And I'm like, I cannot imagine when you're trying to survive out there for whatever it was, like a week or something like that. But then you're also making sure you get all these shots. You're taking care of all the camera gear and stuff. I'm like, that's just a whole nother level. Not like, never mind just being out there. You're just trying to fish to catch fish. You're just going out hunting, not filming. And then you got to add that aspect on top of it, of the filming. That's a ton of work, but people obviously know how to grind it out because they're able to turn out some pretty impressive projects. But I mean, I guess just hats off to you for going through that stuff. And I guess with going out and doing all that, if you could think of, I guess, some generic shots that you see in most fishing, we'll just go fishing for this one, but most fishing videos, what's the most time consuming, hardest shot to get that people might just like, they don't think anything of it? Like, would it like some version of a release or something like that? Like, do you got anything that comes to mind with that?
Hardest shots.
Like basically the time spent to get this shot is way directly related to how simple it looks, I guess. Like, I don't know. Does anything come to mind there?
I think the two that come to mind are very similar. And what it is trying to film topwater strikes, especially with pike. We're very fortunate that we get to go to some pretty amazing places up north. And I film a lot of pike fish. And I love pike fishing. I have like a special place in my heart for it. And in my opinion, the most fun way to do it is if you can get them to go on a topwater, like throw a big, like 8, 9, 10 inch topwater. That's like throwing tons of water, like a whopper plopper type of deal. And you can get like a 40 inch plus pike, like just inhale it. And that's probably the best example I can think of off the top of my head, because it's so, sometimes you can luck out and get it pretty easily, but I've had times where I filmed for like hours and hours and hours hanging off the side of the boat with like a 15-pound camera. And every time it's just like whoever I'm filming is like, okay, you know the drill. You cast, do not touch that bait until I say go. I find, grab focus, and it's like, okay, go. And then work it all the way back. And then you just do that for hours and hours and hours. And yeah. Like the truth is that sometimes, often, topwater is not necessarily the best way to catch them. It's just,
no.
It's just, if you have caught them and you know they're there and it's calm enough, there could be a scenario where you're like, man, even if we get one, it could be worth it. And if yeah. you get the shot, it can be absolutely amazing, but it can be a grind. And like, I've absolutely had days where I probably filmed like 4, 5, 6 hours of topwater footage and didn't get it in the end. And it was just like, mm-hmm. that's just the way it goes.
Yeah. Yeah. So I guess for anyone listening, when you do see that, now you'll appreciate it more. But yeah. I think that's a perfect example, right? Because if like just thinking back to videos in my head, it's like, so that shot comes in, it's probably, I guess it might be put into slow-mo or something, but it's basically, it's probably going to take up 5 seconds of that whole video, right? And then it's back to the guy reeling it in and stuff like that, right? Yeah. So it's like, that's that for that. I don't know if you've gotten one of these before, but I see all those pictures or videos of like a brown trout sipping a fly off the top of the water or something like that. I'm like, how many bugs did these guys film where nothing happened? And how many times were they filming a bug and one 2 feet away got sipped? Like that's what comes to mind when I think of that example that you have there. So
yeah, that's great.
I'm guessing that'd be pretty similar, right?
Yeah. I've never got that shot before, but I know what you're talking about. And like you see from the outside and you're like, wow, that's really cool. But it's like, if you think about how long they could have sat there, it's just, it could have been a very long time.
Exactly. Or you see the ones where it's like a dragonfly flying or something. It's like, how long did you just go back and forth, probably figuring with this camera, watching this dragonfly, and then finally something decides to eat
it? Yeah, exactly.
No, I think that's a pretty good example there. But I guess as far as kind of making a career out of all of this, you obviously have to be a pretty open-minded person for taking on lots of different jobs, especially jobs that probably aren't very typical. Like, at least if you're not filming in an industry like this, lots of things are more controlled, right? As far as you've got your talent and you know exactly what's happened, you're in a controlled environment. But when it comes to fishing and hunting, you know that every project you take is going to be different to some extent, right? So kind of how do you take that in mind and kind of make a whole career out of it that you're able to sustain yourself?
You know, that's a good question. I think that a really, really important part of most business, maybe all business, but most business is you need to create a niche for yourself and your business. And in some fields, it's obvious to the point where you don't even think about it and you might not even know you're in a niche. But yeah. In content, it's everything. A good example of it is probably the most common type of photographer is like a wedding photographer. And most right. cities have relatively saturated wedding photographer markets to the extent of like everyone, there's a million of them. And unfortunately, a lot of them are very, 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 very similar. And
yeah.
So if you're somebody in the content space, if you go into an area in which there's much less competition, naturally there's going to be more business, even if the market's smaller, which is exactly what the fishing and hunting industry is like. It's still a very big industry, but right. It's smaller than others. And, you know, I think that in a lot of business, a very useful saying is like the concept of a jack of all trades, but a master of none, is something that I've never strived to be. Like you want to, like, my goal has always been, if I want to be the best at something, I don't care how minor or specific of a thing I'm looking at, you want to try to be the best at something. So whatever field you're in, no matter how small it is, if somebody says that they want the best in that, you want to be the name that comes to mind to some level, right? And I think that that's an important part of it. And in this industry, like, there's a lot of people who are a lot better than me with a camera. There's a lot of people who have better cameras than me. There's a lot of people who have more experience than me. But if you don't know hunting and fishing, you're a lot, you know? that's such a big part of the job is understanding. Like if I go to an ice fishing lodge and I'm supposed to make a video that's used for them and their promotion and marketing purposes, I need to know what's the clientele? Why are they there? Like, what is the reason they're spending their hard-earned dollars freezing their butt off going ice fishing instead of going to Mexico? You know, because there's reasons. And it's the same reasons that I would go. But it's important to understand that kind of stuff and understand what is the day of lake trout fishing in the cold look like? What is that? Why do people do that? What do they want? What do they want to see? What do they want to feel? And if they're watching a video, what's going to make them, you know, what's going to tug on their strings to like be like, yeah, maybe I'll go do that, right? So that's the kind of stuff that matters, really matters. And it's no different than guys like the other guys in the industry that have found success. It's because like it's all the same reasons.
Yeah, and I think that's a very good point. Is someone might not think about that when they're watching a video. It's like you can't just go and get any editor off Fiverr or something like that, right? To do these things, even if it's just editing, you can film all the stuff, but you need someone who's filming, someone in front of the camera. Obviously, that's most people would know that one. That person in front needs to know it too. But it's like you can't through the whole process. You can't really go out and really give out this stuff for other people to work on that aren't part of the scene because they just don't understand what the feel should be like, really what's going on at all. And, or just kind of little things that I'm sure you pick up on, like, oh, that's really good to have in here, where they would just look it over and wouldn't even think twice about it. Right. So I think that's one thing that people don't realize is it's already a small enough niche of people that say do photo video in the outdoor scene. But then you need to, because you can't do it all yourself all the time, right? Like eventually things get so big. Like imagine, well, I guess you would know with 39 hours, like that was a ton of work, right? And you would have needed multiple people doing that too, right?
Oh yeah. Like that was, I remember dating back to the, it would have been like 2019 when season 2 would have been filmed and all the planning that went into that with like all the cameramen and then like, oh my goodness, the guys who edited all of it. Like, I cannot even imagine. Like, I shot Team Saskatchewan, your boys, in season 2, and, like, I know what I shot. I know how much footage there was. I know everything that happened. And then you step back for a second, and you're like, wow, that's a lot of stuff. And now you think about the fact that there's other teams and all of that has to get put together, and it's just like, oh, that's – there's so few people who have edited that amount of footage in that kind of scenario. Like the people who have dealt with that kind of stuff, like you're talking people who work in Hollywood, like the average person, like I've never edited anything even remotely close to those 39 hours episodes. Cause it's just such an out of this world amount of footage. And to tie that all together is like, it's tough.
Yeah. Well, and it tied together so seamlessly. So did you edit all of the Saskatchewan stuff at least?
No. So all of the footage got handed over to a guy who was working with Jay at the time, and he edited all of it. And then as far as I know, like I think Jay and Aaron helped with aspects of it here and there, maybe like towards the end to polish it up and whatnot. But most of the heavy lifting was done by that one editor. And I can only imagine.
And then he quit.
It was, I can't even imagine, like months of editing and bring that to everybody. And like, Who would think that, right? Like no one will ever know how many hours got put into that.
Yeah. And then it's so easy for someone to comment, when's the third one? It's like, please think about what goes into these. Cause it's not, obviously not easy. Right. But no, that's, and I think that goes to show again, how those guys are just on such a high level when it comes to this stuff to even be able to do that. Once again, for YouTube, this isn't for some box office kind of thing, right? Like this, it's a very, very good production and it's going on YouTube. And this is just people, really, you got to have the love for it, right? Like this, when it comes down to, you got to have the skills and everything like that. But if you didn't have the love for that, lots of these projects would not happen at all. Hey.
Yeah. Oh, 100%. And I think that there's also like, I know I'm biased, but I think there's really something to be said for the core Central Canada fishing audience. Like the outdoor community in Central Canada is strong. And, you know, even just like the amount of people that just the way that people make friends and whatnot, like the way, like even like us meeting in the past and like all the people that you've had on your show, like the Manitobans and stuff. It's just like, I just don't think that's happening everywhere else. And like that, the core community here, I feel like it goes a really long way, even with like here's a good example, like with season two, I'm not sure if you knew this, for the finale of season two of 30 Hours, they rented like a big theater in Winnipeg and like, did like a thing there. And I forget how many tickets they sold, but I think I'm pretty sure they sold out the place. And it was just like out of this world. And I remember, I'll never forget the feeling of being there in like this sold out place and just like looking around and be like, this is 38 hours. Like this, like that's why we're all here. It's not something bigger than that. Like it's for this. And it's like, that's when you really realize how dedicated people are and just how big of a name that series became, right?
Oh, even with when we all watched the premiere after the Saturday of the ice show last year, right? Yeah. Like that was, there is a good amount of people there, and I'm sure lots of them have been at the show all day as well. Like it, and it's not like it was something that was hugely advertised either, right? Like this was like, come to the show, watch the premiere, stuff like that. And there was lots of people there and it's not just random people watching. Like everyone's talking to each other. If you don't know someone, you know someone that knows that person. Like it's so connected. And I don't know if that's maybe something that you're used to being from Manitoba, but from someone outside Manitoba, like myself coming there, and when I went and fished the Red River and stuff like that, like it's insane the kind of community that there is for the outdoors in Manitoba. And I don't know if maybe it's because, would it be fair to say things are so centralized with Winnipeg being the main hub and lots of it's close to Winnipeg. I don't know if that would be it, but it's because Saskatchewan is quite spread out with, like, I'm in Moose Jaw, but then there's Regina, Saskatoon, and then there's so much more north. It's like, you're a bit more spread out. Do you think it is the centralization of Winnipeg there that kind of helps with that?
I think geography definitely plays into it a little bit. But there is just something about Manitobans in the outdoor space that are close. Because even like, for example, like I think a great example is like with the Red River that you brought up, is like there's so many scenarios where people, like huge populations of people, will be fishing in Manitoba at a certain water body or whatever. And it's not even just that. It's just like, I feel like people know each other too. Like there's almost still like a small town aspect of it.
Yeah.
And there's so many people who have huge friend groups in the fishing industry, like me included, where the, like, fishing is kind of the only thing that ties you all together. Like that is like the only reason. It's not like you're like, oh, I went to high school with that person or this, that, the other. It's like, no, it's just the industry. And it's no different than like, you know, tomorrow when I go to the ice show to start setting up, I'm going to say hi to every single human being I walk by. And it's like 95% of them I don't know outside of the fishing industry, right? Like it's like, that's like the only thing. I just don't know if that exists everywhere else. Like it's like some of Central Canada, there's just like something in the water.
Yeah, I definitely agree with you. I don't think it does exist many other places. And even like I think lots of things, our age is different. What I've kind of mentioned earlier in the podcast too, has been trying to kind of build that friend group. And it's within the industry, right? Like I've got the buddies that I do lots of hunting with or whatever. And some of those guys, most of those guys are ones I knew from school or hockey or whatever, stuff like that. But with the fishing scene, when you get to, I find at least just fishing mainly, is there's lots of competition. Even if there's not tournaments, there's lots of competitions when you get to those guys that are in that like decade older than us. And it's kind of, it's always just been competition. I don't know if it has to do with the records from Saskatchewan, stuff like that or whatnot, but it feels like it almost feels like lots of those guys aren't as happy to see other guys outside their circle doing well. Whereas lots of these younger guys, like the way you can talk on Instagram, stuff like that, like lots of these guys are just like, oh, I'm going to be up in your area. You want to head out? Oh yeah, for sure. Like it's not as, I don't even know if competitive is the right word, but like standoffish. There doesn't seem to be as much of that, right? And I think that there's even less of that when you get to Manitoba. And I don't know what it is, but it's insane. Like I couldn't believe it when the first time I went there and just saw how many people even just on the river fishing from the bank and stuff like that. And I'm like, you just don't really seem to have that stuff as much here. So I think there's a couple of things that play into it, but totally agree that it's not a common thing, but it's a very good thing to have. And I think that's also why you've had so much success with the Hunfish Manitoba, stuff like that, right? Like you can just, it all starts from one little spot, but it just seems to resonate with everyone in the scene. So I think you guys are pretty lucky out there, but
we're very fortunate. There's no doubt about that.
Yeah, but it's pretty sweet too. Not like I'm only 6 hours from Winnipeg, so it's not like it's, or eight, something like that. It's not like it's that far away, right? So it kind of, I think things are kind of being more like that just within the outdoor scene, which is nice. Like it's not so much just the old boys club and kind of old gruff attitudes, which is nice to see. So, and I think that just plays into things getting even better and better. Like I see lots of the programs that Manitoba does. Saskatchewan's making their programs a lot better too. And I think just the more eyes that get put on it, like what do you think the Huntfish brand has done for the outdoors as far as dollars being put into, whether it's stocking or habitat? Like how much do you think that's helped with Manitoba?
It's huge. Like there's so many levels to the benefit of young people getting into the sport, getting people into this industry, being passionate about it, and things kind of relating to that, even like being like having strong ethics is even like a big part of it too. Like I think that there are massive benefits in terms of like the economy and tax dollars and stuff like that. Like there's no doubt about all that. And like that money circulates and like license sales increasing and whatnot, all that is important. But at the end of the day, this industry desperately needs young people to continue to be passionate about hunting and fishing. And there's some areas where that's thriving and doing like really good. And there's some areas where it still needs growth for sure. Like hunting is a great example of that. Like hunting needs to continue to grow, especially in younger people. And there's a lot of industries that are dying because younger people aren't continuing traditions that their parents and grandparents used to do. And hunting and fishing is one of those ones that really need it. And I think that, I don't know if Manitoba is necessarily doing better than anywhere else when it comes to that. But what I think Manitoba does really good is that you have people to look up to, like the Jay Siemens, the Claytons, the Aarons of the world and whatnot. And I think that when you have education mixed in with that entertainment, that goes a really long way. Like I think a really great example is Josh McFadden, one of a kind human being, one of my best friends. And we do lots of stuff with him with recipes, like outdoor wild game and fish recipes. And I mean, that's kind of like the central pillar of his career. And it's so important to do that kind of stuff. Like we have videos on like how to debone like a shoulder of a deer and stuff like that, and educating people on like cuts and stuff like that, and how to like utilize different types of fish. And you know, he's obsessed with his drum and whatnot, and that type of education is huge because it enables people to practice the sport positively and ethically and sustainably. And I feel like that's the stuff that's really important, because that's stuff that's like thinking about the future, right? Rather than just like old boys club, here's my giant fish I caught and that's kind of it, right?
Yeah. Old boys club, turn their entire deer into garlic sausage and call her a day.
Criminal.
Yeah, that'd probably make Josh cringe. He's like, if you're going to make sausage, like I saw his one sausage video there. I was like, that looks incredible, but it's not just your typical American garlic sausage, right? So
yeah,
I think I actually watched that video of how to, like, cause I've only been hunting for, I think 3 or 4 years now. And I think I watched your guys' video on how to break down the shoulder while I was breaking down my first one or something like that. And so it was nice having Josh on camera for that too. So helps for sure.
That's the thing, right? Like, I mean, like I've been hunting my whole life, and something like that, I'd be the first one to say every year. It's like, if you harvest something, it's like, there's always times you're like, how exactly do I do this again? You know, like I know I've done this a million, or not a million, but like I've done this several times in my life, but it's like, there's always little things. And, Josh has taught me and like all of us in our friend group so much, like little things that we just didn't know about. And yeah, we're very grateful to have our own little personal chef running around all the time.
Oh yeah, not a bad guy to have on any fishing trip or something like that.
That's why we invite him on all the trips.
Yeah, well, that's like when you're talking about having those videos. Like before, I'd even shot a deer. I was out with my buddy, and he got a nice muley, and there's three of us. So me and my buddy, we were the one field dressing it. Third buddy's job was to hold the phone as we watched Steven Ranella field dress a deer. And that was like, this is one way to learn how to do it, right? Just on the fly, and you can watch those videos. So it might not be something that like gets put out for someone to sit down on the couch and watch as like lots of Jay's video or something like that, right? That's like a storytelling thing. It's like, this is a video that's going to be getting watched time and time again, anytime someone looks up how to debone a deer shoulder, and it's going to be useful, right? And it doesn't have to be anything crazy fancy, which I think, like, I don't know if you find this, but when you go to say you want to work on something on your trolling motor or something, and so you look up a video on how to do that, and it's got all this fancy stuff before and stuff, and I'm like, just get to the point. And that's such the nice thing about lots of those videos with Josh, is it gets to the point. But everything Josh does too is so aesthetically pleasing, like the Fed by Fire stuff, right? It kind of falls into both of those, but I can quickly go and yeah, there's how you debone a deer. And it's just another aspect on top of the eye candy stuff that's just so helpful. And like you said, lots of things kind of have barriers, and just makes it easier for people to go out there. Oh, this is how you do it. Oh, that's actually not that hard. Maybe I will get into hunting or something like that, right? And it's just trying to grow that. Because I agree with you that the hunting for sure seems to be, I don't know about, I wouldn't say dwindling. I don't think that's a good word, but it there doesn't, like it used to be when you talk to like people that'd be our parents' age, it's like everyone hunted, it seemed like, for the most part, right? And now it's like, you'll know some guys, but it's not really something that everyone's doing like it used to be. So definitely something to watch for. But I guess kind of changing topics a bit here, you as the guy behind the camera, what's kind of going through your mind at any given time when you're on these shoots? Like some of the things I think of, obviously don't have really any experience behind the camera, but like lots of those things, do you ever feel awkward being like, oh, you got to do that again? Or like we need, say you're flying around somewhere on the float plane on the way there, oh, we need to do another pass or something like that. Like, is that stuff that goes through your mind? Like kind of like, oh, I don't want to have to ask, but I got to do it. Like, is that things that come up with you?
Oh yeah, there's definitely some of that. And I think that like early in my career, that was something that I wasn't very good at. I wasn't good at interjecting and holding that director role that you sometimes have to have. Yeah, sometimes it sucks. Like I make people repeat things in interviews all the time when I don't want to make them say it a 10th time and stuff like that. That's always going to be a thing. I think it just really comes down to reading the room. You know, like sometimes you have to know when it's time to back off a little bit. And there's other times when I know I can get away with more. Like a good example is like, Kevin hates me for it in the winter when like he's holding a fish in the water and I'm trying to get some camera setting perfect. But like, I know I need to get it the way I want it to be. And to him, I'm probably just nerding out over something that could be done a different way or something like that. And he's sitting there with his hand in the hole, holding a fish or whatever.
Just frozen.
Oh, like just so close to frostbite. And I'm just like, yeah, just give me one more sec, you know? But yeah, I think like at any given moment, you know, I think that in a perfect world, I think that it's nice to be on shoots when you have the ability to take a deep breath, look around and be like, how can I make this grand, you know, not just good. How can I make this crazy? And sometimes things click and you have just like your pick at the litter of like, I want this shot, sunset here, like things just go great. But it's fishing, right? Like sometimes you don't have that luxury, and sometimes it's more just a matter of like, what do I absolutely have to get in order to make this possible? Which that's just kind of the name of the game.
Yeah. And how often do you get blamed for deer not coming out, fish not biting, stuff like that, because you got the camera going?
There's always good jokes around like stage fright, where like the second I pull a camera, like something happens, like whether it's like missed hook sets or whatever it is. Just recently I was on a waterfowl shoot, and I love filming waterfowl. It's so much fun. But it can be stressful at times because it's hard in the sense of the money shot is birds cupped, like 110% committed on the deck, kind of right before you take them. And the tough part about that is that normally at that point on a hunt, everyone's head is down and you're completely concealed and you're just trying to not get spotted. And you're just waiting for your guide to yell. But with me, I need to have the camera because I need to be filming already. So it's really hard to get the shot and do everything that I need to do on my end in order to actually make that shot the way I want it to be.
Yeah.
From focus to exposure to framing to whatever without getting seen, because I'm holding this huge camera trying to not get spotted.
Yeah.
Right? So it's stressful at times because it's like if I see birds flaring and I think it's because of me, it's like it can be tough at times. But this last trip went so great. And I was filming some Americans from North Carolina, and it was just, we were just having a ball. And on the first day, they were pretty pumped that I picked, or like they were the group that I went along to film. And it was like two flocks or something like that on their first day. And they were like, the shooting was a little bit with like iffy. I think they were like, maybe they dropped like a bird or something, like a bird or two, and maybe like three or four or five should have cut dropped. And it only took like one or two flocks before they finally looked at me and they were like, oh, it's because the camera guy finally came. The camera came out. And now we can't shoot. And it's like there's always a little bit of that. But it's always some good fun.
Yeah. Well, and that's the thing I think would be tough, because you see, even like you take clients out of it, and it's just whether it's just the guide or like we said, like lots of the gruff and tough scene is part of this hunting and fishing stuff. So you're there, young guy with all this technology, and some of these guys probably shaking their head like, man, like I have to do this kind of thing, right? Like I don't know if you've run into that before, but I could just imagine some of the older lodge owners or something like that. And I mean, it's only going to help them in the end, right? Whether it's a lodge showcase or something like that. But I got to imagine that there's some guys that like see all the stuff that I'm sure you bring and they're like, wow, like kind of what's going on here, eh?
There's the odd time where you'll get, like there's always going to be people who are a little bit more abrasive to certain things than others. But I always try my best to avoid that as much as possible. And if it's there, like a lot of the time you can avoid that with just being friendly. And then the other thing that makes a really big difference is like, you know, if I go out that day, and I get like a topwater strike or a cool drone shot or whatever it is, I'll bring my laptop over or something. I'll be like, hey, like check this out, like this is from today or whatever. And once they kind of like see what's going on and you're not just, I don't know whether you're not whatever they have in their mind of you. That takes care of it normally pretty quick.
Yeah. They get to see what all of that, I guess all that effort was that went into that shot, right? When you're like, they're like, do we really have to keep casting topwater 6 hours of this? You're like, yes, you have to.
Yeah, exactly. And like the thing is like, I feel like with that example specifically, that is just like, you need to be able to read the room so well with like a topwater is a good example where like, I've got no problem telling Kevin or Josh or someone like that or Jay to be like, hey, no, like I want to get this. Whereas like if it's like a guest, for example, that's like paying to be there, then it's like my number one goal is to not infringe in any way of exactly how they want to live out their trip, right? Like that.
Yeah,
it's like I need to be a ghost as best as I can, and like that's number one because they're paying to be there, right? So.
Yeah. So how often are you on a bumpy boat ride home and you're just bouncing along? You're like, if we would have stayed another half an hour, we could have got what I wanted. Does that happen very often?
You know, like sometimes there's a little bit of that, but we try our best to leave it all out there. And, you know, I feel like you just have to embrace that sometimes it's just not going to happen. You know, like there's definitely times where you know that you were super close. You know, like this last year we had, we were at a lodge, Keaton and I went into a bay and we were pike fishing and I had the drone up and I was like looking for pike and whatnot, trying to get topwater strikes on the drone. And we had like a couple like low 30 inch pike, maybe like one or two in the 35, 36 range. And then out of nowhere, I just saw this like giant, I was probably like in the 42, 43 range or something like that. And just like a big, big, big pike. And we raised it and it kind of like pike eyed us and we didn't like blow it out or anything, but we knew where it was and we backed out and got Jake because we're like, it'd be better if Jake could catch it and whatever. And then we tried for so long, and this in this bait, it just had no interest in eating. It was completely off, and like we were following it around, but it just would not eat.
Yeah.
And you know, I think the biggest pike we had caught at that point was like 37, 38, and this was like a giant, and it was just like one of those times where I was like, I have every shot I need other than a big pike.
Yeah.
And it just doesn't happen, and it's just like you just drive away, and you're just the way it goes, yeah. Right? Like we left it all out there, did everything we could, but if it didn't want to eat, there's nothing you can do at some point. Like you can try everything, and if it doesn't want to do it, it doesn't want to do it.
Yeah, and that's obviously not with the video side of it, but on the guiding side there, like Lac Le Mar, you can see so far, like the water's so clear, and yeah, you'll have that a lot with client. Like it's almost hard sometimes to pull them off of a fish because you're like, okay, this fish is just nonchalant. It's showing no signs that it's going to eat. Like, let's just move on kind of thing. But it's, yeah, it could be like a 45 and it's not going to eat. And same thing, you're watching it. And it's like, okay, eventually you just got to go. And that's one of those things where I'm driving home. I'm like, man, it would have been nice if that one ate. But like you said, if you've got everything else, it's at least happy with that. Same thing for the guiding. Like you've caught some good fish that day, but you're still going to think about that one fish, right?
Oh, for sure. Like, there's definitely a point where like, even if you caught a 42, 43, if you see a 45, 46, you're going to feel the same way.
Yeah.
That's just the nature of fishing and adrenaline and whatnot, right? Like that'll never go away. And if it does, then we got a problem.
Yeah, exactly. No, that's something that's with me with fishing. Like I love hunting. Now that I've gotten into it, like it's definitely right up there with fishing. But the thing for me with fishing is you never know what that next jig or cast is going to bring in, right? You never know. At least with hunting, you can see it before anything goes down, but you never know what's going to be below you at that time. So that's what will always keep me coming back for fishing, because that will never change. You're never going to know for sure. Even with how good live scope is, you're never going to know for sure. So no,
especially with like, I feel like when you get to the big predators, the ceiling is so high for how like crazy an experience you can have. Like if you're fishing a body of water that has world-class pike or trout or whatever it is, the ceiling of the biggest fish in that lake is so high relative to like the average person's best experience. Like the biggest pike you've ever caught versus the biggest pike in the lake is huge. Like the difference is enormous on what the fight and whatnot is going to be like. Probably even more for trout, right? Like you've got a bunch of, you know, 35, 36, 37 inch trout in your life, and you've got a couple in the high 30 inch range, and you're like, yeah, I've got a bunch of big trout in my life. It's like, well, if you go catch a 50 pound trout, it's going to be nothing like anything you've ever seen. Like the feeling is so different. And like it's exactly what you just said, right? Like it's just like the not knowing, like that little bit of mystery there is just like, it'll never go away.
No, exactly. And that's what keeps me coming back. And I'm sure many others that are listening as well. And I guess with you, obviously there's lots of, so whatever, we watch an hour long video, but it's filmed over a week. There's lots of behind the scenes stuff. So obviously I'm sure some stuff can't come on the podcast. But as far as like, what's some of your favorite behind the scenes moments? Cause you've been with lots of these people that lots of our viewers have been watching for years. So like what's some of your best behind the scenes moments with these guys?
Oh man, that's a tough one. There's definitely some that come to mind.
Like how many things go wrong behind the scenes? I know we see some of it on camera, but like everything.
I break so much stuff in a year, like you have no idea. So much stuff gets broken, and like some of it's probably preventable, but some of it definitely isn't. Like some of it is definitely just the byproduct of pushing gear to the limit. But in terms of behind the scenes, one that I'll never forget is I did a trip years ago with Aaron to the mountains to film some. We filmed like a bull video and a cutty video.
Yeah.
And he just got a new truck right before the trip. It was like the first time the F-150 was a diesel. And anyway, he got that truck like right before the trip. And there was a night where we slept in the truck. And this is like middle of winter, like negative 30 outside. And we're both just sleeping in the front seat of this truck. And so we ran it all night, obviously, because like it was like negative 30. And I kept waking up in the middle of the night freezing, even though the heat was on. And I just couldn't, I was like in my sleeping bag and I kept waking up and it was freezing. And I couldn't figure out why. And every like time Aaron woke up, he put the cooling seat on my truck, on like the seat. And I had never been in a vehicle that had that at the time. So I just kept waking up and I was like, why is my seat freezing? And I had to, like, I probably turned it off like a dozen times in the night. And it wasn't until like days later that I realized like, oh no, that was like not a dream. I was like, had to turn it off, which means that he was turning it on. And it was just like, it was just one of those times where it was just like so ridiculous. But that's just dealing with Aaron. But
yeah, I was going to say, he's just messing with you that whole time.
Oh, it's just, stuff like that is just never ending.
It's such a weird feeling with those things too. I remember the first time I used one, I was like, I don't even know if I enjoy this. Like, this is such an odd feeling.
Yeah. I'm not 100% sure on that one. I'm trying to think any other like good quality behind the scenes. Like there's definitely some stuff that people didn't see. Like 39 hours is a good example. I like to bring it up again. It's just cause it's like, there's so much that happened. And one of the things that I wish I could have captured better was when we went up to Cree, it was a really big bargain to go to Cree, because with a fly-in in 39 hours, like fly-ins are unpredictable, right? Like it's so weather dependent. 39 hours is already a pretty weather dependent thing to do, because it's like, what if one team gets destroyed by a storm? It's like it all of a sudden gets tough. So to fly is like very high risk. So leading up to it, there was a lot of conversation on if it was a smart thing to do. And anyway, our last day there, the weather was horrible, like horrific. And I think we were supposed to fish like, it was like sunrise to like, I think maybe like 9, 10, 11 in the morning or something like that. We were supposed to be leaving. And it was like 60K wind gusting to like 70 or something like that. And we were in a tiny plane,
small plane,
very small little plane. And there was like our boat ride from our last fishing spot to the lodge was so bad that I couldn't film at all. And we were in like, I don't know, 6-7 foot swells in a 16 foot boat. And it was like, I had the camera in my jacket like this with one hand. And then all three of us were just like holding onto the boat, cause it was like, if you weren't holding on, like you very well might fall in. And it was like this awful boat ride to get back. And then we got delayed flying to come back. And it was like very sketch to fly back. And it was like, I don't even remember. I'd have to go back to see what all got included in the episode. But like, we were all like incredibly sick on the way home. Like, it was like a 2-hour flight back. And it was just like I was like green in the face for like 12 hours after. It was just horrible. Like, I don't remember anything from like the second to fourth day of that. Like, I don't really have many memories from filming 39 hours, because I just like actually just don't have memory from it.
Yeah. Well, you're just cooked the whole time. Yeah, you're probably so tired.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, it's enough for one day out on the water cooks a guy, right? Just with being out in the elements. But even if it's nice out, you're still beat after that. And then, all the work that you guys would have had to do outside of just being on the water too, that would be like, because you would end up driving for them and stuff too, right? Like the cameraman would hop into that.
I didn't drive at all, actually. They were great, but I think they maybe slept like 8 hours to like combined. Like they both took like 4-hour naps or something like that, and then that's it. And like meanwhile, like I slept probably, I probably got 4 hours almost every night.
Because
like the night period, I was able to like sleep in the back seat and stuff like that. So I managed to sleep a little bit here and there, but
that's all you need.
four hours in a dream is all you need. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, and to still be able to perform, whether it's fishing for those guys or filming while being that tired, like that's, you wouldn't really be able to tell coming, like when you're watching that, right? And obviously people know the time constraints that go into the 39 hours setup, but you don't really notice a bunch of bad stuff that would usually come along with no sleep.
Yeah, 100%. Like those guys are champions for being able to continue to entertain and communicate and do their job on that little sleep, because that's a very hard thing to do even on the best of days, never mind when you're hooked.
Yeah. So I guess with talking about like the quality of stuff, how often do you watch stuff and just shake your head? Like, are you able to enjoy watching like an outdoor or a fishing film, or are you critiquing it the whole time?
You know, I don't know if this is a weird thing, but I can watch really bad content and enjoy it because we're like bad on like aesthetic, like polished level. But
yeah,
because if you know what someone's trying to do and they're doing it, then there's like, I can really enjoy that. So even if somebody was filming, like, you know, someone with 15 subscribers and filming videos on their phone, if you understand what they're trying to do and they're doing it with the resources that are available to them, I can still enjoy it because that's the exact same thing I'm doing. I'm trying to make the best thing that I can do based on what I'm given.
You can respect it.
So yeah, exactly. So it's not like a quality thing, but what I hate, the thing that I hate watching the most is my old work. Old stuff. Even sometimes like I'll shoot something in the summer and like early summer and I won't edit it until winter. And even on timelines like that close together, I'm like evolving on that quickly enough that even that short amount of time is enough to look back and be like, man, what was I doing? Like, why did I do it like that? Like, that doesn't make any sense. Like, I would do that way better right now. And I feel like that every year, I think that that's going to go away and it just isn't. So like, even if I look at something I made a year or two ago, I'm like, I can hardly even watch it because I just feel like, how was I so bad? You know?
Yeah.
And like, I wasn't. It's just like, that's just kind of how growth works and looking back and stuff like that. But no, I don't really over critique when I watch stuff because I feel like people are doing, like, people above me could look at it the same way of what I'm doing, right? So it's like, I respect wherever somebody's at.
Yeah. Well, my dad always says for lots of things I'll talk about, I'm like, but like so-and-so is doing this or that. He's like, no one started knowing what they know now, right? So like you started knowing nothing really when it came to it. So you got to kind of respect that. Like I started trying to go through and make all the long form videos for YouTube of the interviews for the podcast and stuff, and or just even going back and starting to cut stuff up now for shorts for socials and stuff. And I'm like, I'm having trouble like watching some of this. I just don't like going back and watching myself. But obviously, as you know, you got to, I don't know how many times I listen to an episode before it goes out just through editing it and stuff, right? So you just got to play it over and over. And it's like, I don't know how much I enjoy this, or even just going back to like our earliest episodes when we had, I don't know, $50 mics off Amazon and we were recording in whatever situations. And it's like, man, this sounded bad. And when we put it out, we're like, wow, this is pretty good. Like, it's crazy. But I guess that also shows you in real time that you're learning and getting better, right? And there's always room to improve. So I think that's a good way to look at it. Cause with the quality of stuff that you are able to film and create, it'd be pretty easy for you to sit there and be like, all this other stuff that I'm watching is not good, right? But I think that's, like we talked about earlier, it's different mindsets, right? And being able to look at something and appreciate what they're doing. Like if you don't want to compare yourself to others all the time either, right? Like I have a couple videos on YouTube, but it's literally just a chest mounted GoPro and I have them there because whether it's like family members want to watch them or I like to look back on it. Like I have my PB walleye that I got because I decided to film that day and stuff. And it's like, I can go back and watch those I like watching, but I'm also like, I don't expect them to be good. I know it was a GoPro strapped to my chest and it just recorded, right? And it's having realistic expectations, but I'm also not going to compare that video to one of Jay's videos or something like that, right? Like that's kind of another thing too. The comparison is the thief of joy or something like that, people say. So yeah. No, No, I think that's fair. But I mean, as far as how, if you were to look at where you are now, would you say it's pretty insane to where you thought you'd be even like 3-4 years ago?
Yeah, it's every year of my career, I could say that exact same thing. I never in a million years would I have thought that there was room for like this much growth. And I always have to remind myself that I'm so fortunate that I'm in an industry that allows growth. Like you can almost be as, I don't want to say big as you want to be, but I was very fortunate with like the timeline and position and whatnot of my career starting and becoming established that like, if I wanted to pursue certain avenues, they were there and they still are. So if I say, I want to go do this, I want to do more work in a certain industry or certain product or something like this, like for the most part, the world's your oyster and you can kind of just go for it. And I'm just so, so fortunate for that. And you know, it comes right back to like the team and the community, and like all of us have been so enabled to chase what we want to chase. And yeah, I'm forever grateful because I never in a million years would I have thought that I could have got to this point. I remember, like I went to University of Manitoba for 4 years straight out of high school, and it was while I was in university that I really got into photography and then videography. And that's like, I built my business throughout university so that when I graduated from university, it was like go time. And mm-hmm. I remember, it wasn't the first camera I bought. The first camera I bought was in high school, but the first set of equipment that I bought was in while I was in early in university. And it was like a bunch of like, kind of like the first handful of things that I bought that could be like, okay, I could actually kind of like make a couple videos of this, like the first mic, the first shotgun mic, the first like decent lens or two, the first decent camera, like that kind of stuff. And at the time I couldn't afford it 100% on my own. And there was like a handful of things that I wanted to buy. And I went to my parents and I said, hey, there's some stuff I want to buy and I can't buy it all right now, but there's a shoot that's coming up that I want it all for. I could pay you literally in like a month or like a couple months or whatever it is. Mm-hmm. And they said, yeah, sure. We'll give you like this, like it's a pretty small amount of money. And it was just like enabled me to do that. And I remember the conversation so well in my parents' house where I was having to like convince them essentially that like there is an industry here. Like there's people, like I think I can make some money pointing a camera at a fish. Like I think I can do that. I think I can make a couple bucks here.
Yeah.
And like now, like I'm thinking back to that conversation, it's like I'm just so lucky that they had some faith in me and like enabled me to chase those dreams and like encourage me to do that, because it's just like thinking back, it's just like those were early days. And now it's like looking back at it, it's just like crazy to look back on.
Yeah. And I guess with, you mentioned the crew there with the, in Manitoba there with the Hunt Fish, I guess just to speak on that a bit, like we've talked a bit about it, but for people that are listening, kind of what is the whole idea behind Hunt Fish Manitoba? Like what's going on there?
So the core of Hunt Fish Manitoba is that it's the tourism for hunting and fishing in the province. And a really big part of that is lodges and outfitters. Manitoba has a plethora of lodges and outfitters ranging from different products from like drive to fishing to fly-in fishing and ice fishing are kind of like the three main pillars, and all of those are spectacular in their own rights. And there was a need for the marketing and advertising of that industry to get revolutionized, and it did. And a big part of that was going from the old school ways of like trade shows in the States and word of mouth to online, right? Social media content or whatnot. Content marketing is kind of like the pillar of it. And that was a big thing for me because I came into it at the right time where they needed to grow in a space when I was entering the space. So the piece of the puzzle just fit really good. But Hunt Fish Manitoba grew so much so fast into all sorts of different areas. And a big part of that was how close the community was. So in Manitoba, the community is so tight with the brand where there's so many different levels to it. And I think a really big part of it is our Master Angler program. There's so yep. much, it's such a tried, tested, and true program. And people were so dedicated to it for so many years, way before we were even born, never mind yeah. now. And social media, the floodgates just absolutely opened once social media came around in that industry. And, you know, once you start throwing in influencers like Jay, Clay, Aaron, and Josh and whatnot, it's just like,
yeah,
the floodgates just, it got out of hand in the best of ways.
Yeah.
And it always comes back to just having the right people in the right roles. And that's what Huntfish is.
Yeah. I think that's like, we talk about looking from the outside, looking in, like it's insane. Like that, I've only been fishing a handful of times to Manitoba now. And I always say on here, it's some of the best fishing I've ever had. It's just insane the number of fish that we catch every time I go. And that Master Angler program just adds a whole nother level to it. Like, yeah, I'm going to go some, I don't care if there's a program or not, I'm going to go fish somewhere. But then when you add that program on top of it too, it's like, it just makes it that much more fun, or it makes me stay an extra 2 hours because I'm one away from a specialist or something like that. Right. Like, I think that program is awesome. And it's Saskatchewan just re-implemented one of theirs with the Sask Wildlife there. So I think that's something that they're going to try and emulate as well. But like you said, that one's been around for a long time, and it's so proven that it works so well. And I think that's another thing that helps get more people into it, right? You can go and see where lots of these fish are coming from. And some people wouldn't like that, obviously, but it's like, that's just getting more people into it. Like, if you like an industry, you have to allow people into it. Otherwise, you're not going to have much of an industry to be a part of. So I think that you guys do a really good job with that over there, because it's not even like none of it feels like advertisement, right? Like lots of these lodge spotlights and stuff that I'm seeing, like they don't feel like an advertisement. I'm getting to see a whole walkthrough of a lodge and the scenery and the fishing that it has to offer, the hunting that it has to offer. Like that's the biggest thing, is it just feels like a video I want to watch, not something that I'm waiting 5 seconds to skip on a YouTube ad, right? Like I think that's the biggest thing there. So kudos to you guys for that one, for sure.
That's good. Yeah. And I appreciate that, because like the goal with it a lot of the time is to be more about like more emphasis on a story and less on sales, right? Like it's not, I don't want somebody to watch a video and be like, great, I'm gonna, it's all about sale. It's more about like, there's a step in there that is getting skipped. And it's like emotion, you know, like you're trying to like yeah. trigger an emotion, and the emotion is what's going to make somebody want to go, act on it. Right. Yeah. And you know, even like backing up and talking about the Master Angler program, more, is a big part of it too, is like, we're fortunate that, a lot of amazing fisheries in our province are very accessible, you know, like Lake Winnipeg is the best example. There's tons of people who ice fish way more than they open water fish. And it's exclusively because of Lake Winnipeg. You know, it's an hour or 2 hours away, depending on where you live, and you can catch a limit of walleyes every day and a handful of masters a year, or lots, you know,
yeah,
depending on how much you fish. And it made really good fishing really accessible. And, you know, northern, like some drive to ice fishing destinations in the north are like not that far away, and the fishing yeah. is like world class. That makes a really big difference. And when you have something like the Master Angler program, it also adds so much value to resources. And mm-hmm. that's something that I've learned so much about in the last handful of years, and I know we'll just continue more and more, is like the value of resources is so important, because that's what is going to continue to make fishing good in the future for our kids and our grandkids, and hunting and like sustainable development and sustainable harvest, stuff like that. The Master Angler program helps a lot with that, because if you have value on certain things, like for example, like we'll have people, we used to do like, whether it's a contest or somebody like Josh and his drum, like there are people who target drum because of Josh. That's a fact, yeah. you know? And it's like, well, if drum are targeting people to a certain water body, it's like, well, now drum have value, you know, or mm-hmm. more value than they did before. And that's a very positive thing. You know, you want resources to have value. And if you look anywhere in the world, wherever places have higher value on resources, those are the places that are going to prosper in the future. And that's one of the reasons that Manitoba has really good fisheries, is because years and decades ago, things like that happened. Things like barbless hooks, you know, barbless hooks happened a long time ago, and our fisheries have reacted to that in a really good way. And I've heard from many old timers in our industry that that was a really big deal at the time. And they've seen the results because of it. So that stuff goes a long way.
I also like the license system, at least for fishing, where you have the conservation license as well. As someone who's coming from out of province, who I'm not keeping fish anyways. It's just kind of another easier way for you to get into it, right? Not that, I mean, if you're making that trip, a license fee isn't going to really make or break the trip, right? But it's just another thing that shows that they're thinking about these things. And yeah, I think they've obviously got things figured out there pretty good. And yeah, I think that's pretty sweet. So like you said, Massillon Angler Program, can't go wrong there. I'm excited to see where Saskatchewan's goes, because it's pretty fun to be able to take part in it. Actually, one of our former guests, he's currently the one that has the most master anglers so far in Saskatchewan. So that was pretty sweet. But he goes hard in the paint. He's dedicated to it. So I guess with that topic, I've had you for an hour 22 here. So one of our last topics here, Winnipeg Ice Fishing Show. Got to talk about it. Circles all the way back to the start here with Eric Lebova, right? We've got the ice show this weekend. So this will be coming out on Friday, and the show will be this weekend. So you're going to be at the Hunt Fish booth, right?
Yeah, we'll be, Hunt Fish booth will be there. Keevan and I will be there. Jay's going to be at our booth both days.
Okay.
So yeah, that'll be really great. We've got tons of merch. We got a bunch of stuff that is launching on Saturday, like exclusive stuff that's not online. You can't get it anywhere else. And we're going to sell it till we sell out, and then it's not going to be available for at least like some kind of time afterwards. And some of it is stuff that like we have not really dabbled in at all yet. So we're like really excited. Like some of it is like years in the making. Some of the
stuff sweet.
We're bringing out. So we're pretty excited about that. It's like the show is just such a great time. Like it's like, I cherish events like this so much, because every single time I always sit there for a second and think like how rare is it to have all these people in the same group in the same room at the same time. And it's just so much fun. Like if you like fishing or just like the outdoors in general, and you're anywhere near, like it's worth it to come and just hang out. Like it's a fun time.
Yeah. Well, and that's where me and Brandon got the chance to meet all you guys last year. And we don't really have like a ice show specific, like something like that in Saskatchewan. Like there's your boat shows, stuff like that, right? But to have something like that, walking in there the first day, I was like, oh my goodness. Like we walked in there that Saturday morning, I was like, this is insane. I was like, this is almost like heaven for anyone who likes fishing and stuff like that, right? So no, that'll be a good time. And it's not expensive to get in there. It's not bad, right? So I mean, you could spend easily both days in there and really just scratch the surface of everything that's there. So is there no Catch and Cook booth this year?
There's a Catch and Cook booth. Yeah, okay. They're going to be right across from us. So Josh will be working that, and then Keevan, me and Jay will be at ours. And Jay's presenting, like he's doing like a couple seminars. And I'm not even sure exactly on what, but yeah, it's going to be so great. And like everyone, the thing that's so great about it is it gets better every year. So people continue to just try to like keep leveling it up. Like our booth is going to be way better than it was last year, because A, we want it to be, but also it's just like, that's just kind of like the name of the game. Like if everyone's trying to level it up, it's good for everybody. And like you mentioned like that it's not affordable. It's like, I think it's maybe, don't quote me on this, but it's like $10 or something like that, I think. And it's like just our booth alone, like we're giving away two $500 gift cards for Cabela's, and we have like a couple other giveaways that we're doing. And every booth is doing like, whether it's giveaways or deals or like some kind of like combos or bundles or something like that.
Yeah.
And if you need anything, regardless of what you need relative to the price of entry, it's like, it's worth it. And you get to meet like all sorts of cool people and brands and stuff like that too. So it's just an overall like very positive thing for the industry.
Oh, for sure. Like I know when we kind of, once we'd done our walk around a couple times there, we just hung out at the Catch and Cook and Hunt Fish booth because they're right by each other there. And I'm sure me and Brandon just talked to Josh for like 2 hours and just kind of whatever. And it's just like, you get to see lots of these people where you wouldn't normally get the chance, right? And it's, I think that's a really cool thing for lots of people. And there's good, like you said, deals everywhere. Like we got bought the Markham Pursuit camera here and got the rotating arm for it there. And this, I forget what booth it was, but it was like a save the tax. They didn't have tax on anything. And so it's like, you already get to go in there and see all this cool stuff. And then people are putting on deals and stuff too. Like there's things I wouldn't even think of. There's a lady there last year, I got her business card and she fixes pop-up tents. That's part of her business. She does fabrics and stuff like that, but fixes pop-up tents. I'm like, I didn't even know that was a thing, but I have an otter that I sent back for warranty. So they made me cut all the windows or doors out or something. She's like, yeah, I can fix that. And I'm like, oh, perfect. Like just stuff like things you wouldn't even think about. Right. And it's all there. So yeah, definitely encourage anyone who's listening to go. I know guys from that listen to the show, they came all the way from Alberta to go to the show last year. And we had a terrible storm that we drove back in. They drove back in as well. And, but once again, it was totally worth it. Lots of great, the seminars are great. You'll learn a lot of stuff there if you're willing to sit at those seminars, because there was a couple different places last year that seminars went on too. So, I mean, it's just a fun weekend overall. So I'm sure it's a lot of work for you guys though, eh?
It's a lot of work, but I really, even though it's not exactly like my specialty, like planning shows and whatnot, I really enjoy it because, you know, like last year, seeing the line that we had, like without sounding like I'm just bragging, there's so few provinces or states that could have people lined up for merch that just has like your province on it, you know? Like,
yeah. For a tourism booth, basically.
Exactly. It's right. One thing if people are, I get why people are going to get lined up at like Frostbite, right? Or
yeah.
They're like, oh, there's some new whatever it is, whether it's like a raffle of this or whatever, right? Doesn't matter what they're going for. Those brands have been around for so long that it's like, yeah, of course we're going to get excited about something like that. But if for us, it really like hits home that it's like, hey, things are working, you know, like this is like, people like the brand. We're doing things right and people are actually excited about this. So it's just, it's great. And it, we really enjoy it. We're really happy that people enjoy it as well.
Yeah. And I can only imagine how you guys feel with that much. Cause like we, like when you say you watch, like you look at this video got this many views and then you can kind of put into perspective of how many people that actually is. Right. And when you're seeing people come up to the booth and stuff, you're like, this is working. Like even when me and Brown were walking around last year, I think we had like 5 or 6 people recognize us. We're like, why are you recognizing us? Like this makes no sense, but it's like, obviously it shows in person that people are listening or watching and stuff like that. And it's definitely a pretty good feeling. Cause you're like, you like doing it anyways, but you're like, oh, there is actually real people. You can put a face to a name, the people that are commenting or whatever, stuff like that. Right. And yeah, it's definitely pretty sweet. So for anyone listening, definitely make your way down there. Is it at the same place as last year?
Same venue. Okay. Yeah. 10 to 5 on Saturday, 10 to 6 or no, 10 to 6 on Friday, 10 to 6 on Saturday, 10 to 5 on Sunday.
Yeah. Okay. Perfect. Well, like I said, we've had you here for an hour and a half, so I'm going to hit you with some rapid fire and then I'll let you go since you got a pretty busy weekend ahead of you here. But you haven't seen these before. I excluded them from the show notes so you wouldn't see them. They're nothing too crazy, but I like to just hear the quick reactions to them. So I've got 3 here. The first one being, what is your absolute favorite part of filming?
Feeling like I might have filmed something that maybe has never been filmed before.
Okay.
Like one time I got a ridiculous shot that was like within a couple hours after a like 140 inch deer had shed its velvet and was like fresh. And like we filmed it at like 80 yards and got just like unbelievable footage of velvet like hanging off. And you're just like, that's pretty rare stuff to, you can't just say, I want to go get that shot. Like you have to be in the right spot at the right time.
Right. Okay. That's fair. So number 2 here, you had lots of places for your job. what is a place that you wish you could go to, or a place you'd go back to as like as a customer, something like that?
Ooh, that's a good one. Can I say two?
Sure.
Okay, I'm going to give you one hunting, one fishing. Hunting was a waterfowl lodge on the coast of Hudson's Bay, 200 kilometers southeast of Churchill, right on the coast, like in polar bear country, moose, like giant moose country. I filmed there in 2018, and it's called Casca Goose Lodge, and it was an unbelievable experience, and I'd kill to go back. And then fishing, Kississing Lake is a drive-to lake in northern Manitoba, famous for being able to target giant spawning lake trout. And when we went, like the guy I was filming caught his specialist, which is like he caught two or three 40 inch lake trout in the morning, all on one shoreline in like 6 feet of water, casting like a 6 inch rapala. And it's just like a husky type of thing. And it's just like that fishery is out of this world. And I really want to do that again.
Yeah, for sure. No, that's fair. So I guess some question off of that, how often do you get to, if you're filming a lodge, how often do you get to fish, or how often do you get to shoot if you're filming a hunt?
A little bit here and there. If things go really good, then I might be able to, or if the shoot demands it a little bit. Like there's definitely scenarios where, especially with ice fishing, where I'll get everything I can get. And at some point it's like, we just need fish now, you know, especially like, lake or fishing. You can film everything you need to film. At some point, there's just lines in the water and there's nothing else to film until fish are getting caught. And if you can get a line in the water, your odds go up, right? So there's definitely scenarios where I get to a little bit. I'm very, very grateful for that.
For sure. And I guess another sidetrack there, you mentioned Rapala, I see 13. Are you doing like product photos and stuff for them?
I work with Rapala Canada and whatnot, and there's such a great team, like such a great,
they're awesome,
really
awesome
amazing
people.
Guys over there. And I really enjoy working with them, and they have great stuff. They've been around for a long time, and I really enjoy it.
Yeah. They've been with us since day one. They're at 13. So we couldn't agree more with that one for sure. Yeah,
they're the best.
So third and final one here, it kind of maybe plays into the first one a bit, but what is your dream photo or video that you could capture?
Like a shot, like a single shot?
Well, you could do like a single photo and then a single video, like shot of something.
I filmed that same trip, that waterfowl trip, from the helicopter. I filmed a bunch of polar bears. But none of the footage is very good, and it's like from a helicopter. I have... Even before that, but especially since then, I've really, really wanted some crazy footage of a polar bear, like at ground level, close, like the whole frame, the head type of thing, and getting some
National Geographic
stuff.
Yeah,
like National Geographic stuff. I've really wanted to do that. I've been close to having the opportunity a couple times. It's probably just going to come down to me having to like pursue doing it. So I would say that's number one for a video stuff. And then a photo... Oh man, that's tough. What photo that I want? There's definitely some things that I'd like to take a photo of. Like one of them is a 50 inch pike. Like I'd love to take a picture of a 50 inch pike because they exist, but probably not too common. Not to the extent that lots of people like to think they do. So
yeah,
they're rarer.
I couldn't agree more with that as a guy.
Yeah. So I think that would be pretty cool. I'm sure that there's all sorts of like my favorite shots are things kind of like what I said earlier with like where I feel like I can show this to somebody and they can say I've never even seen that before. You know, never mind. I can't believe you got that on camera. It's like really rare things where like for example that velvet to bring that up again. It's like I hadn't seen anything remotely close to that at the time. And I still have not seen anything close to that since. And that was in 2020.
Yeah.
So stuff like that is what I really like. So anything unique, and I feel like hunting is really special for that because you have no idea. Like you really don't know what you're ever going to see. So anything that's unpredictable and rare.
Yeah. Okay. That's fair. I'll allow that for that. There can't be anything too specific, because especially it's kind of like once you get that dream shot, for at least for the photo side of things, it's like, well, now what, right? It's kind of back to, you just have to find something else. I'm sure you can find another dream one for that.
Yeah, there's always something better.
Yeah, for sure. I almost quoted, I don't know if you guys in Manitoba see Leroy and Leroy.
Oh, yeah.
We have them in Moose Jaw. There's always something to do, but
Yeah,
I appreciate you taking the time before your busy weekend here. I know it's a grind for the show, but like you said, it's definitely all worth it. I guess plug yourself here. Where can everyone find you?
The main places are just in the same old, like, Instagram and whatnot. Marcella Ferry is my name, but a lot of my work is at Huntfish Manitoba and whatnot. So either of those two places, you'll find me.
Yeah. If you see any videos from them and you think it's good, just imagine that it was Marcel. If you don't think it's good, it wasn't Marcel.
Yeah, even if it's not, then that's fine. You can still assume I did it.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Well, no, we appreciate you taking the time. Like I said, this one's going to come out right before the ice fishing show, so you already know it's going to be a good time. But yeah, thanks for taking the time in your evening for coming on to the Weekend Warriors Fishing Podcast.
You bet. My pleasure.
Well, hope you guys enjoyed that episode. I know I had an awesome time sitting down with Marcel. It's always good getting to talk to any of those guys over there in Manitoba. Just down to earth, and they always got some great stories, some great information, and definitely learned something new every time I've talked to any one of those guys. But hope you guys enjoyed that. Like I said, we had about an hour and a half there, I believe, so a little bit longer one. Usually would almost split that into two episodes there, but I wanted to keep this one a full one here before the ice show this weekend. So if you're heading that way, drive safe. Hope you enjoy the ice show. It's a good time. Lots of great people, lots of great products, and like we mentioned, some great seminars that will be going on as well. Just at the end of the episode here, want to once again mention 13 Fishing, presenting sponsor of the pod. Like I said at the top of the episode, we're getting close to ice fishing season here. The time is coming. I know lots of you don't want it to be winter yet, but I can't wait to get on the hard water. It's probably one of my favorite ways of fishing. It might even beat out summer fishing, so definitely looking forward to that. Head over to the Ripple Canada website, check out all their brands. They've got some great stuff. I've got some Strike Master stuff coming, some new blades and stuff like that. Looking forward to being nice and sharp for the start of the season here. But head over there, use code Weekend Warriors, save yourself 15% off anything in the store. And like I said at the top of the episode, they ship quick, so you can even do a couple orders here before we have safe ice. But thank you very much for tuning into episode 61 of the Weekend Warriors Fishing Podcast, and we look forward to seeing you in the next one.
Thanks for tuning in to the Weekend Warriors Fishing Podcast. If you enjoyed the show, be sure to leave a review on your favorite listening platform so we can reach more anglers just like you. Find us on Facebook, Instagram, and YouTube for media updates and behind-the-scenes content.